Good evening and welcome to the Métis Voices Radio Show, our own internet radio program at BBS Radio every Friday evening, 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Station 2, featuring a variety of subjects and special guests coming to you live from the Matisse Métis Museum in beautiful Vavendy, B.C., Canada, with your host, Gail Haggerty. Call-in lines are now open, as well as a chat feature for your questions and comments. Here are the numbers to call. In the U.S. and Canada, toll-free 888-228-4494, and worldwide, toll-free 877-489-6350. For direct lines, go to the www.bbsradio.com, BBS Station 2 on the right-hand side. And don't worry if you miss any of these call-in numbers. They are posted on the BBS Radio website. Those who wish to enter BBS Live chat rooms, please go to the homepage of BBS Radio on the column on the left, scroll down, dip into How to Listen, then scroll down to Chat Live, BBS My Chat Room. Choose the drop-down menu, select the chat room chatter hall. Sign in if already registered, or register if not. And now, your host, Dale Haggerty.
Welcome, everyone, to Métis Voices radio program on this October 17th, 2008. And as you can see, I am the co-host that is helping with the show tonight, and we have invited back as our guest, so that you may know him better, our good friend, Métis brother, artist, entrepreneur, and spiritual leader and counselor, Derek White Skycloud. Hi, Derek. Long time no hear.
I see.
Wow, Derek, it seems you have a very full and rich life. Now, before I ask you my first question, I would like to say that it was expressed by Louis Riel, Manitoba's founding father, and I quote, "My people will sleep for 100 years. When they awake, it will be the artists who give them back their spirit." So, Derek.
Now, what do you have to say about that, my friend?
That's a good one.
Hi, Derek. It's Dale here.
Hi.
We had our class canceled for this for the next 2 weeks, so I'm going to be doing the hosting here with my lovely wife, Dale. She actually did a good job. She said, "Don't say anything to Derek, but we'll figure." We'll surprise
everyone
you.
Everyone will go to sleep for 100 years until an artist shows up.
Yeah, there you go. We're awake.
We're awake.
Derek, we want to know more about you as an artist and a Métis craftsperson. Can you tell us about what kind of art you do? And I know you're also in music as well. Can you tell us some of that?
Well, a lot of my art is, I guess you call it visionary art. I get a lot of inspiration from spirit. I've had that for many years, since I was a child. I've been an artist since I was, as long as I can remember. I would say when you used to get those TV guide magazines and comic book magazines, and they would have a little picture in there, and so you can draw this person. you know, draw this, copy this picture and then mail it into the art studio. And then what they do is they evaluate it and they would call you up and they would train you free of charge. Well, back then I was like 10 years old. And I did it so well, they thought I had the talent of an 18-year-old. And when my parents told them that I was 10, they were totally floored. But at the time, back in the 1960s, they told them that they could not teach me because there was a Canadian law that they could not teach anybody under 16 years old. So it broke my heart that I was not old enough. But it didn't stop me from drawing or to do any art. I'm self-taught. No one taught me how to do my own art. Even acrylics was what I use also on canvas. No one taught me how. I did this on my own. I just felt that I can just take colors and blend them in and work it from there. But I do canvas art. I'm what you call a controversial artist. I like to mix a little bit of Christianity with our native teachings. So I mixed a bit of Excel. Did one art piece. I did Christ, Jesus, kneeling down on the cliff's edge, and I had a native elder who's a medicine keeper at the below the mountain, and he's actually singing the eagle song and has a fire burning in front of him, and he's singing his eagle song to the universe. And so blending those two together, I call them spiritual teachers. That's why I call myself a controversial artist, because some of my work has been rejected by some of the museums, art studios, because they don't like to mix one with the other. They have an old, an old belief system. They figured that Christianity and Native teachings is more like a blasphemous way. They are worried about the community getting angry with them, or the Christian community getting angry with them. And I said, well, whoever will take my art is where it's supposed to be. And I do have my art in one of the studios, and it's called the CRS Trading Post up in Britannia Beach, up in BC. And they take great pride in selling my pieces up there. I learned a lot of my crafts just through the years of teachings. And I watch people, but I like to do my stuff differently from others. Like, I like to be I like to copy the same thing all the time, because everybody else wants to share their beadworks or teach their beadworks. Myself, I've always wanted to do something totally different, where you know well it's your own energy in it. And my wife, she does beadwork. She does bracelets and neck bands. Myself, I like to do the other type of beadwork, which basically I'll do medicine pouches that hang on your hip, or any beadwork on the wings, or beadwork on small feathers, quilled. I do all types of varieties of beadwork. It's good. It's very, very soothing. It's very it keeps you focused. You don't lose. Like, you just can't say I got nothing to do. I'm always keeping myself busy.
Well, Derek, you also had a business. You know, you told me earlier in your life that you used to own, excuse if I'm not saying this right, the
I own Cadillac Kitty Homes. I actually made cat.
That's what it was. I wasn't too sure about it. Yeah, tell us about that's also, because you used to design your own cat homes, right? Give us little insight.
Any older elder would understand. I would say, you'd ask me what a different occupation. I said, I have to build cat houses for a living. And they would go, har. But I made cat houses, scratching posts. I did it for 10 years. Reason why I'm not doing it anymore, because my back went out on me, ended up getting back surgery. But it's part of the artistic skills. I used to make cat furniture look like palm trees, look like with anything that has on the swing. It was very, very well designed, quality made. I was in demand. I used to sell to over 250 stores across Canada, right straight up to Alaska, Yukon. I was in big demand for my work. And in fact, we used to do cat shows. I used to sell my furniture, cat furniture, cat shows, and that's where I used to always do a lot of sellouts. Or we did some pet food companies. In fact, we did the P&E, the big P&E, many years back, and we were there for the 17 days, and we did quite well in sales as well as exposure to the public. From that, we got a lot of proposals, propositions from Korea, Japan, other parts of Europe to supply them, and it comes to the point that I couldn't keep up with it, and they want me to hire more people, but I always consider being considered quality, not quantity, because if you go into quantity, then you start losing your profession, your realism of who you are. But I used to, like, again, cat furniture, I used to get dreams, and I was shown a design, and then I wake up in the morning and I draw it all out and I put it together, and if it became an attraction to the cats, I had 9 cats that were my models. And if they liked them, then it went on the market. But if they didn't bother with it, then I didn't bother making it. I used to make over 125 different designs. So people had a choice. I had a catalog for the public and all the major pet food supply stores. In fact, we even had a wholesale supplier that actually used to buy them from us and sell them across Canada and the United States.
Now, you also have tried your hand at carpentry as well.
Yeah. Well, carpentry's been always been. I grew up with that. My father. Right now, I'm building my workshop in the back of my place. Got the framing up right now as we're talking. I'm starting to frame putting the walls up now, and. It's getting it back. Carpentry has been part of my life. I used to work for a construction company when I was quite young. Not for very long, but I learned a lot from my family. And, when I lived on the farm, all we ever built was corrals and storage sheds. There were sheds for the cattle. So it was constantly, on the roof, doing roofing and, oh yeah, we did our share of stuff.
I know that.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I know that you were sought after for quite a while for people who wanted you to build decks and different things for them in the area where you guys used to live.
Oh, well, yeah. That was Workers' Compensation Board. There was a couple people that needed wheelchair ramps, and so when Workers' Compensation Board see my workmanship, they were so pleased with the design. In fact, they asked me to work for them. They paid me to do all the demonstrations, and I said, sorry. Because if you start working for a company that starts asking you to do these things, then they get so fussy that it becomes a headache after. So I rather work for myself, and I know what I can do. But if someone says to me, well, I want it this way I want it, or, you know, they get really, really fussy, or I was hoping a different color or a different kind of wood, and I went, I was around that so much for so many years, especially my dad. I used to watch my father go through that abuse where some people would say, well, I was hoping for this, not for that. And then it comes to the point my father used to come home and say, you know what, it's okay to work for yourself. It's not good to work for somebody else, not always.
Now you are now you're working as a spiritual leader and a counselor. Give us a little insight.
What that involves.
I have been doing this for many years, even before I met you guys, just to find my own footprints, so to speak. Spirit came to me when I was quite young. I always say spirit. Actually, I had a few near-death experiences where I became very sensitive to the world and to the other side in spirit. And I was curious about myself and what I'm supposed to do with it. And I thought it was normal like everybody else. And there's people who used to come up to me and say to me, you know, your hands are so hot when you touch us, or, you know, it's like their headache's gone. And I was kind of curious, like, well, how is it that I can get rid of a headache? I didn't know that. You're just a boy. You're just going like, oh, that's cool, you know. Guys are saying, okay, they probably took an aspirin for that, but they didn't. They just felt that there's something about me that would be special. I just took it as being a kid. We just all did. But through the years, I decided to go further with my skills and decided to work with the community and started getting to know people during the journey, getting to know my own native roots when I was 16. And then I started getting even more into my life, my personal, I guess, native roots. When I was in my late 20s, early 30s, and then it really started going out there and letting people know that this is who I am and what I need to do with it. And there was an elder who came to me one day, and he said, it's time for you to start to open up to the world and tell them who you are, and you need to be heard and you need to be seen and you need to be known. And he also told me, he said, there'd be a time that you'd be in such great demand that he said that you'd be overwhelmed. He said, but don't never turn them away. He said, because they are needing you, because it's who they see something of you that they need to be, I guess how you say it, they'll come to you for a reason. There's a purpose, and you have a purpose in life. But he also said you can't please everyone, because there's always somebody out there that will always try to, judge you for who you are. And he did tell me, he says, there is a time for you that you be judged for your skin color, and a time for you be judged for who you are with your identity, time that you be judged for what you can do. And they just said, just stay to your own truth and in your heart, and those who see the truth will know who you are. Those who don't won't know you any longer. And I remember that when I was in my 20s. But I just thought it was not really that big deal. And then I realized after all these years, I thought, wait a minute, I remember being told that. And I had to think about it after. But I know the elder I worked with then, he passed away then. Since then, I haven't spoken to him since.
Now, without going into too much detail on how you and I met, not only did we become very good friends, but you also were my teacher as well. And I know that you do give classes now to people who are interested in the type of spirituality that you teach. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, right now, I mean, I'm involved in all types of programs. I'm also doing what's called animal totem healing circles. I like to help people on their spiritual journey. So I put together, some people call it shamanic journey. I call them spiritual journeys, because it's a journey that it's yours, that you're taking, and I just guide you into it. But we always journey with an animal that we believe that's part of us. And I guide you through, and then what you will be sharing with me or anyone else in your family that's important to you, that represents you, who you are on that journey. And other types of skills that I teach is healing, hands-on healing, or other types of healing programs. I teach Wing Chi, which was based, we use crystals, stones and crystals from the earth, and we've combined those efforts with that together, help people dealing with their fibromyalgia or their personal issues, joint pains, or I even had one lady come to me, and she actually had breast cancer, and I didn't know what to say at the time, and I said, well, we'll do what we can do best, and I had two of my students that I was training at the time when she had, when this one lady was a having breast cancer, and we used certain stones and did healing on her. And I didn't know about this until, maybe a month and a half ago. And one of my students who was a friend of the lady that actually had the breast cancer, she told me, she said that the woman's still living and she's doing very, very well. In fact, she never had to have surgery. She never had to have chemo, nor radiation. She said apparently after what we did for her at the time, she said she went back to the doctor to get the x-ray done and they couldn't find the cancer. So she told her to tell me to say thank you, thank you, thank you so much. So I was quite even, like, shocked. I didn't expect that to hear that, but I can't say that this is going to cure cancer. But sometimes there are certain things that our body is made of energy, and there are certain personal stones, I believe, that are actually can help manipulate and break up those. I would say negative energies, and to disperse them. And I really strongly feel that there's always something there you can share and help the person through. I also do an old traditional blanket ceremony was given to me, handed down to me by the elders. The blanket ceremony consists of soul retrieval, basically dealing with your issues from your past, whether it's through childhood or through your past lives, or it's done traditional way. We wrap like a little baby in blankets, and then there's bear hides over you, and I drum over you, pray over you, and then the results where you deal with your results from there through healing. And then again, I also do. I'm also the counselor for the Indian Residential School Survivor Society, and we have every second Thursday at the Vancouver Friendship Center. I work with the elders that have people dealing with residential school recoveries, so it's been a great journey. I used to work for Métis Family Services as well as one of the counselors, spiritual counselors. I'm always out there. I'm also called to go travel across Alberta to work on the reservations as a counselor as well, with Driftpaw First Nations or with Canuso, or even as a drug and alcohol counselor with Compound. So it's up in Gruard. I'm everywhere. I'm wherever I call, I go.
That's good, Derek. If people were trying to get a hold of you, what would be the best way that they could do it? Do you have a website, your phone number?
I've got a website, whitesskycloud.com, WHITESKYCLOUD. It's all one word, whitesskycloud.com. I have email. They can email me, whitesskycloud@yahoo.com. Or they can phone me. They can phone me through you. I don't mind at all. That's what I do. They can call me and make an appointment, and we can discuss what needs to be done, what their issues are. Anything to do with the Indian Residential School Survivor work, they can contact the team leader with the AHF team, which is Maxine Windsor. She's my team leader. And then she would set up an appointment with the clients if they want to come and see me.
Hey, Derek, we're going to come back to you on the residential school, the work that you do. But first, I just want to tell everyone that if they have any questions or comments for you, our call lines are in the U.S. and Canada, toll-free, 888-228-4494, and worldwide, toll-free, 877-489-350. For direct lines, go to the BBS website main page, where they will be listed. So if you have any comments or questions for Derek, please feel free to call in.
Hey, Derek, it's me, Dale, again here. Listen,
yeah.
I've had some always friends, saying, Derek, he's got this weird last name, you know, Derek White Sky Cloud. And I said, well, you know, there's a story behind his name, you know, like, and, you know, one day, you know, that I'm going to get him to come on the radio, and I'm going to tell, I want him to explain how he got his name. And, Derek, this is very good. And I remember you telling me the story, and, I always like listening to you, because when I was in, when I was needing that help and spiritual pathway guidance, and you were telling me about some of the stuff you did, and tell us about how you got your name when you were up north. I think you said you were way up north, north to Alaska.
North to Alaska. When I was a boy, there was an elder one time. When I was actually, I'll go over, really, really, really tiny. I used to dance. My mom and dad used to take us to the res when we were kids. I was like 5, 6 years old, and we used to powwow dance. But there was nobody wearing regalia at the time. You just danced. It was just that you're, where was up in Manitoba, up in Griswold, on the res, and my parents would take me there all the time. My mom, who was also Métis herself, she actually befriended. Actually, was my mom used to work in the sanatorium. She'd help the Inuits and the First Nations and the Métis people, mostly the women. And some of the men, and she became really good friends with a lot of them, and they would invite my parents on to their territory to dance, come up and dance. They said, bring your kids, bring your husband. And, before my dad was married to my mom used to date a First Nations fellow up in on the Griswold area in the territories, but my mom she married my dad, and then we kids came along into their lives. And again, I was 5 or 6 years old, and I remember when we were dancing on the land there. I remember being standing next to the teepees and stuff. I remember seeing this priest with 6 RCMP or 4 RCMP officers stand behind him, and the priest was wearing a long black dress, white collar, and I didn't know what they were, but this guy was trying to scare me. He was, you guys get out of this land. You don't belong here. Get off this land. You're doing blasphemous work. No. And like, it's against the law. You're all going to go to jail now. And my mom was really angry. She's the kind of person that she would just fight, or argue with them. But, before all this ever happened, there was an elder that came to me and he says, I want to give you a name. And can we have my, I want to give your boy a name. And, so my mom said, oh, okay. So she told me, she says, your name is Sky is White. I forgot the tongue, what he named in his language, but he called me the Sky is White. And, I remember that growing up, and then my mom reminded me, my dad reminded me, and I said, oh, the sky is white. What does it mean? And mom says, I don't know. They gave it to you. So I thought about it, but he didn't go around telling everybody, you know, but I thought maybe it meant white boy. I wasn't sure, so I took it as what it was. And then many years later, and I started learning about my native culture, where my grandfather, before I never learned about my native culture, my grandfather, I was, 8, 9, when he passed away, when I was 13, I found my grandfather's black leather envelope, which is actually all the documents in there, Métis documents. And he didn't tell anybody about it, but I found it in my mom's trunk, and I was really happy about it. I was quite surprised. I mean, I was happy. I was cool. It was cool to have native blood. You know, I thought it was really neat. So I decided to tell the kids in school that I was going to school at, and I got into fights from that, and then they took me to the principal's office, and then the principal wanted to find out what the whole thing was about, and I told him that I had native blood, and I said Indian blood, and he said, can you prove it? And I said, well, yeah, my grandfather's documents, I got proof. And so they called my mom to bring the documents, and next thing you know, I was shipped to grad school and going to the residential school. But I didn't know it was residential school because my mom wouldn't tell me. She said it's a special school. But I had more friends there when I was growing up, and I was there for about a year and a half, and then my dad took us up out of Manitoba to Alberta. And I grew up in a regular mixed lifestyle with, you know, all kinds of people you get to know, so there was no meaning on that part. But later on through the years, I was at a healing fair up in Fort Langley. And this elder came up to me and she says, I know you from somewhere. And I said, okay. She says, you're a white sky cloud. And I said, I don't think so. And she goes, yes, you are. She says, you're a white sky cloud. And you're Wasisquin. She said, you are Wasisquin. And I said, excuse me? And she said, and I started to cry. I started feeling very teary-eyed all of a sudden. I became very emotional. And I didn't know what to do. She says, you cannot turn this name away. It is yours. And it always has been. And she said, did you ever have a name given to you as a child? And I said, yeah. I said, they called me this guy is white. I was with my wife at the time. They used to call me this guy is white. And, she said, well, that is your name. Wasisquin, white sky cloud. So she says you, and then another male came behind her and he says, you must use this name always. You are called now. Your job is to help people. And that is your spiritual journey. And, I haven't told this story in a long time. I said, okay, I accept it. And, it took me a while to get used to that. I accepted what it was. And then another elder came up to me and he said to me, he said, why don't you apply for your Métis status? I said, what do you mean Métis status? What Métis status? He says, you can apply for Métis status. Like, you can actually get your status. And I said, I don't think so. You gotta look at the role. And he says, no, I'm serious. If you do have enough background in your family, that you can get your status. So he handed me an application. I filled it out, and that was on a Thursday. And then Monday morning, he said, come get your card. And I'm going, like, you're kidding. And he said, we found all the files. So I said, okay, fine. So I said, come pick up my card, and that was it. But my birth name is Willie, W-I-L-L-E-Y, and sometimes it used to be Wiley, because it depends on the family. My grandmother is born from the Bear River Reserve up in Nova Scotia. She is Ojibwe. She spoke Bunji, which basically is a mixture of French, Cree, and Gaelic. It's called Bunji. And she spoke that. She was adopted from the Bear River Reserve. She worked as a slave servant to the families. I've got the documents to show that. She was forced labor. There was no residential school in that territory. It was forced labor. And you left there around the age of 20, 21. They will give you X amount of dollars that you've earned after all the years you've been there. And you move on and start your own life. My grandfather on my mother's side, his name is Robert Henry Rolfe. Rolfe, the last name. This is where the documentation happened, where he is the relative of Rebecca Rolfe, who was known as Pocahontas, Powhatan generation. I am that relative to her family. In fact, I'm going to be going to England soon to find that background, to find her gravesite. I got a cousin in Nova Scotia right now who had been doing the research to the Bowling family, who actually the ones are saying they're the only connection to the Rolfes. They're wrong. We found that they closed the document purposely to not let anybody else in the documentation. We're fighting for it now. And my cousin has found even more documentation proof that I am that relative to that family. My father's side is a European, which is the he's Austrian, Polish mixed, but mostly Austrian. His great grandmother and great grandfather were the king and queen of Austria, where they're called the Halexa. They were they migrated into Canada due to, they were forced to leave the country due to the war at the time, and they came through the eastern part of Canada, and his great grandfather died on the way down, so his brother married his great grandmother and they continued on to the lands, and they became farmers. His great grandmother could not handle the idea of being a peasant, so to speak. She used to get always dressed and fed, and so she couldn't handle the idea of being commoner. But my great uncle, apparently that afternoon they were actually, like, he worked as a farmer or assisting farmers. Remember the large thrashers? They were on a lunch break, and I guess he was leaning against the thrasher to have a rest. And when they were all ready to go back to work, the thrasher backed up and ran over him. So that was the end of that side. But I believe in my, and spirit told me, my elders told me that I have to use White Sky Cloud. I can use my common name, but they want me to use White Sky Cloud. And I asked them why, and they said they would not know a Willie, but they would know a White Sky Cloud. So I said, what do I do? He said, you just do what you got to do. And I've never been shy of it. My father thought if I was embarrassed of my own family name, I'm not embarrassed of my family name. I know what my life is all about, and I know who I am. I don't have to prove nothing to nobody. I'm old enough to deal with it if nobody can handle. Like I tell people, I'm not Red River Métis. I am the eastern coast of Métis. And I'm not Red River.
Yeah,
I don't proclaim
blood.
To be River. Sorry?
Yeah. You're mixed blood from the eastern side. So what was the name of that organization that actually accepted your Métis card or your genealogy?
That was the, hang on. I'm blank. Concentrating so hard. Actually, it was one of the Métis nations before, or Métis United Métis
Heritage.
UHMA. United Heritage.
Métis Association.
United Heritage Métis Association. It was them that actually got my card. I wasn't trying even to get one. They just gave it to me. And they said, well, they gave it to me. I applied for it.
You applied for it, right?
Sorry?
You applied for it and you got it, right?
I applied for it with documents, and they said, here, come get your card.
There you go.
And then somebody else took it over after that. And I haven't heard hide nor hair of it since.
Oh, wow. Well, anyways, we'll get into another question here. My wife there says that you're a counselor for the residential school and healing program. Can you give us some update on what's happening?
Well, I do... every second Thursday at the Vancouver Friendship Center, I do counseling with the Indian Reservation School Survivors Society. And here's something else too: you can't just become a counselor for the Indian Reservation School Survivors Society. You have to have to be a survivor. You have to be part of residential school, and they checked me out because I asked the IRSS. You know, I said, well, I'm surprised that you asked me to be part of this because I didn't ask them, they asked me. And so they checked me out, and they said, "That's I am who I am," and they believe in me. They asked
wow.
me. So, and also through my experience as a counselor, there's a lot of people that came to see me through the years, and they do a lot of community searching. They don't just hire anybody.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
what they told me.
That's so what's going on?
Right now, we've got a workshop coming up. Quite soon, I'll be going down there to the island, to Bowen Island, and we'll be there for the 2-day workshop on the 4th and the 5th representing IRSS. They're just training more training for people like myself, so I become better at what I do. Also gives me qualifications as being that counselor, because you have to learn from all aspects of every area of residential school survivors. And I've had a lot of people come to our circle, and I actually have counselors that sit with me as well. We get a couple of counselors that come and sit with the circle, not just myself alone, but there's a couple that have already had the training experience, and they sit in the circle or outside the circle anywhere, but they listen. And if anybody who needs help, they're available at that time. So like it's the availability of anybody who is in need. Also, if there's anyone who needs home counseling or family counseling with all families, we also have those counselors available too. And then there's also a new program coming up. I can actually pull this out right now, and it's all based on a proposal that's brought forward to the federal government. Where is that? I'll put that here somewhere.
Speaking of federal government, now that we have our same old government in, are they gonna fall through the cracks like they've been promising things, or are they gonna? You think they're gonna keep to their word about the residential school system?
Well, actually, if you think about it, Harper is the one that actually made the apology with the cabinet. I'd rather take Harper or the other fellow who was also very sincere. What was his name? I forgot his name. But not Dion. No, not Dion. The other guy.
Layden.
Layden, because Layden was also quite sincere. Yeah, Layden was very quite sincere. He really, in fact, you see the tears running down his eyes when he was being involved with this apology, because he's got a lot of friends that are of First Nations.
Yeah.
But the Justice Harry Laforme, chairperson, Claudette Dumont, Jane Brew and Morley, commissioner, and also Claudette Dumont, commissioner, they wrote to Ottawa, to Byron Joseph, this is Byron Joseph, chair of the board of directors, and they wrote to the Indian Residential School survivors, to the commissioners, basically. The inclusion of intergenerational survivors on Indian Residential School Survivor Advisory Committee. So basically, this letter that they wrote was to, the purpose was to urge them to consider including intergenerational survivors on the Indian Residential School Survivor Advisory Committee. So basically, I'm hoping this is what it means, is that they're asking for other types of assistance because we're going through generational children. I'll write the letter. I can actually read the letter to you, read it out loud here. I write on behalf of the Indian Residents of School Survivors Society. We are a grassroots survivor-driven organization that has provided services, advocacy, and program development for residents of school survivors in BC for over 14 years. My purpose in writing is to urge you to consider including intergenerational survivors on the Indian Residents of School Survivor Advisory Committee. Over the past 2 years, as the Indian Residents of School Settlement Agreement has become prominent, intergenerational survivors have also begun to come forward with their issues. More and more children of survivors are faced with the reality that the IRS has had a profound impact on their lives. In our work here in BC, it has become evident that any new programming must address intergenerational issues. Briefly, survivors of residential schools were not given the ability to develop healthy parent-child sibling-sibling and child-child relationships. In the schools, all relationships were based on the institutional model of boarding schools where unnatural hierarchies were informed by abuse, starvation, deprivation, tribal differences, new notions of gender roles, etc. These factors disrupted organic patterns of social and emotional development and maturation of survivors. As survivors had children, these second generations were treated as if they were in the residential school system. Added to the rigor of an institutional life in their homes, they were subjected to similar abuses, lack of emotional attachment, and deprivations as their parents had suffered in the schools. Unlike survivors, though, these generations did not know the reason for their maltreatment. The impact of the IRS on later generations continues to unfold and has not yet fully emerged. Without the intergenerational experience, the entire story and legacy of residential school cannot be fully understood. Indeed, intergenerational survivors far outnumber survivors of IRS, and it is their futures on which the legacy of the system and the IRSSA rests. And there's more to it. So they're asking for recognition of what's going on.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Good. Good. I hope they get it.
Yeah. It's got, I also mentioned too, yeah?
Go ahead.
I also mentioned too that there should be compensations for the families that elders that have already passed a long time ago that went through their suffering and never got any compensation whatsoever, and the monies that should be shared amongst the family. It's like a will. So whatever's left on the compensation, that should also be shared within the family itself, because, again, those voices that actually passed away before the apology, those voices have never been heard nor compensated. And that should be shared as well. It's my feelings.
Reed. Derek, I wanted to ask you, before we came on the radio program, you mentioned some news that you had or something that you found out. What was that about?
It says in here, a new twist on who we are question. Whether we like it or not, a fellow by the name of John Ralston Saul writes in his new book, "Where we're a Métis Nation, but are we really?" And so some people are picking on the idea if we really are Métis enough, or is it because of the silver jewelry native art? And I've been reading it more, and it's a little bit slammy in the face, so I'll have to email it to you first before it's even read out loud.
Okay. I thought maybe it'd been something you wanted to bring to the audience's attention.
Yeah, but this one here, they're making it, like I said, you got to read it first. You can share it for the next following show.
Sure. Yeah,
it's written in the Vancouver Sun.
Right.
October 17th today.
When we have a show, you can phone in and tell everybody.
Yeah.
anyways, Derek, is there anything else you would like to add to what you've told everybody that you want them to know about you as a person and a Métis individual?
Well, like I said, I like to work with the communities. I also work as a Métis artisan. I do farmers markets as well. I've been really successful at it. The farmers markets are running every Sunday at the time, and I would fit in as much as I possibly can. Whenever I'm unable to, my wife would do the sales while I'm actually doing church service, because I'm also a minister in training with the Intergarden Online Chapel, Spiritual Chapel. So it's like all areas that keep me busy. But whenever the community needs me, I'm out there. Pretty soon I'll know, be called out to do another diabetes conference. More like almost every year I'm out there up in northern Alberta. And that's reaching out to the Six Nations. It's absolutely phenomenal. When you're out there, people are just... There's such a shortage of traditional medicines out there, and it needs to be shared. People need to know that we can turn to, if we have a diabetic problem, if we're dealing with health issues, sometimes we need to go back to the traditional ways because of traditional medicines, because the doctors have got everyone so convinced that, I'm not taking doctors away from completely, but doctors have got everyone so convinced that you'll never get cured. That is, their way is the only way, and there are ways that you can get healed, because we've actually used those very same medicines before to help people heal, and I find that mighty important. That needs to be shared, and especially even counseling. If there's anyone out there that is searching for that assistance of counseling, please contact me, or you can contact the Indian Resident School Survivor Society if it reflects upon your childhood or family through the family.
There you go, Derek. Very good, very good.
Thank you, Derek.
Derek, it's come to the end here, and I'd like to thank you, Derek, for letting us know a little bit about yourself and what's coming up in your future shows, and thank you very much for being on our show tonight. Well, folks, coming to a close, thank you very much for listening to us into the Métis Voices radio program. We really enjoyed our visit with you and all of you. I would like to thank the directors and the sponsors of the BBS radio station for allowing us to present this program to you each week.
Yes, thank you, Don and Seth and the gang. Be sure to give us your feedback about our Métis Voices radio show on the BBS radio website on the main page. And please visit the museum website at www.MichifMetisMuseum.org and http://MichifMetisMuseum.ning.com.
Next week, Friday, October 21st, we look forward to having our guest, one of our very good friends, the Métis brothers and Métis veterans, Larry Arn McGilvery. Be sure to listen.
And
please tune in next week, same time, starting 7:55 p.m. Standard Time. Have a good weekend, everyone, and take care. Till next week, merci.
Merci.
Good evening and welcome.